Thank you, Jim. Our next panelist is Christopher Delgado, coordinator of the Global Food Response Program for the World Bank. Mr. Delgado joined the World Bank in April 2006 as a strategy and public policy advisor in the Agriculture and Rural Development Department. He also manages the bank's $2 billion Global Food Crisis Response Program. Prior to his current position at the bank, he worked for nearly three decades at the International Food Policy Research Institute and held an academic appointment at Johns Hopkins University. He's worked extensively throughout Africa and Asia, holds a PhD in economics from Cornell University, and is the author of numerous books and research monographs in agricultural economics published in a variety of languages. Christopher Delgado, welcome.
Well, I don't get the handshake till I'm finished. So, first, something I learned when I joined the World Bank that I wasn't very clear on, so I'll tell you, which is that the World Bank is not allowed to do humanitarian assistance. That in the division of labor, that's really the UN's job within the international system. And so when we started seeing the kinds of things in late 2007 that you see, you know, that we saw in, say, 1974, which was an even worse price spike, the World Bank actually did not do any external fundraising. In fact, we were prohibited until July of 2008 from doing any of that, because it was essential that organizations like the World Food Program or others really get the food out, and that was the priority. Now, the reason I mention that is because emergency response is slightly different from the idea of humanitarian assistance. Hopefully the two go together, but there are other aspects of emergency response besides humanitarian assistance. And I'm going to cut out most of the first of the three things I want to talk about, simply because Hank Yan did a better job than I can at doing, getting across basically two points. So I'll just try to make those two points. Then I'll tell you about the Global Food Crisis Response Program, which was the World Bank's response to the food, what we used to call the price crisis, but the food crisis of 2007, 2008, and 2009. And then I want to, if I'm permitted to have any time at the end, I want to tell you about what the G20 has been discussing going forward. Well, you heard it already. It's not over. And, in fact, it's worse. There are more, as was said, there are more hungry people now than there were before. The other point I want to quickly make is that there are lots of villains, but the worst villain in term for poor people is price volatility, because how cruel to have prices spike in the off-agricultural season. If you're talking about farmers, the people most affected, because the most poor, tend to be farmers. It's true you might have had 40 million urban people affected who weren't as affected before, but you had a lot of rural people even more affected. And how cruel that just when you're getting ready to do something about it, your inputs go up twice as much as your outputs, and by the time the inputs come down, your outputs go down also. Now, the thing is, we think that commodity price volatility, and particularly grain price volatility, is up for a while. It was quite high in the early 70s when you had similar problems. Then it went down for a long time, and grain price volatility, at least for maize and wheat, has been going back up again since 2002. And we think there are reasons for that. Now, why? Here we get to the nux of the thing. What is emergency response? One of the things emergency response does is to, if you're an agency like the World Bank, you're supposed to, you basically serve countries. And countries, as was pointed out by His Excellency the Governor, countries really can't afford not to respond when food prices double. Now, the responses can't be theoretical and they can't be slow. They have to be immediate. And some responses are, if at worst, less harmful. Some are even better. We saw a variety of countries that reduced, since you had to tax everything that moved in order to get fiscal revenue, that stopped taxing food. Of course, that eventually would hurt food producers in the country, but they started to stop to putting tariffs on food. There were school feeding programs, which at least got some people who were hungry. It didn't deal with infants or others, but you have cash transfers where you have the infrastructure for it and so forth. But there are a lot of responses that sort of are easier to do if you have administrative control and you don't have any money, and that have a problem that they create problems that are then very hard to solve and end up creating tremendous problems for your agriculture. And that's what actually happened, I think, at least in the 1970s, that you had a series of responses to the terrible problems of the early 70s that probably led, in a sense, to the lost decade of the 1980s in agriculture, because they really took all the money out of agriculture for producers. And this is not the time to give a seminar on this, but I'd put just at the, I'll debate the last point, export bans. I think the evidence on export bans, to the extent they've been looked at, is that they hurt the countries that impose them the most long-term, and in the short-term, they certainly hurt the neighbors. So the take-home messages are there are strong reasons to think that price volatility has increased, that this is really has the worst impact on the poor. I mean, in Ethiopia, on average, at least rural Ethiopia, I mean, 80% of income goes to grain or basic food staples. And so you double prices, that's not too good. Risk management is vital at all levels. And investment in productivity and sustainability of agriculture is the most direct route you really have to longer term, really facilitating adaptation to a changed circumstances. And I'd also add there's a need for focus on empowerment and access, because without that, you're not going to actually get delivery. So then you get the Global Food Crisis Response Program. Basically, the annual meetings of the World Bank are usually in April and October. And in the April 2008 meetings, I think everybody thought that the 150-some finance ministers that were coming to these things would be concerned about soaring petroleum prices. And they came and they were very clear to my bosses and said, look, the food thing is really serious. You've got to do something. And I'm sure they said the same thing to the UN agencies, because it was somewhat after that, the end of that month, that the UN High-Level Task Force was put together. And there was a lot of to-ing and fro-ing. What do we need? What do we need? Well, we needed social protection. We needed risk mitigation. We needed a way to really maintain productive capacity. I mean, if fertilizer's gone up by a factor of four, people aren't going to use fertilizer, and you've got an even worse problem the next year. Well, in bank terms, we put together this program, and the board gave us $200 million out of what was left of the bank's surplus account from its commercial operations, and they basically said, you go ahead, we trust you, as long as you follow certain rules. You can approve projects without our having to tie them up in bureaucracy for months. And so that created a business model, which was to really minimize the threat, to try and minimize the threat posed by some things like the food crisis, help clients avoid negative short-term responses that would be counterproductive to long-term solutions. And this is the key point I really wanted to make, is move from mitigation of harm, because really crisis response is about mitigation, adaptation, or mitigation, prevention, and adaptation, I should say, really to move from mitigation of harm to prevention of future crises and better adaptation to changed circumstances. And this was a partnership. The bank invested quite heavily in money and staff in the UN High-Level Task Force operations. Civil society organizations have been supported by GFRP in 16 countries, UN organizations in 8. And after July, we were able to get some external support, more grant money from Australia, Russia, EU, and Korea. Now, there are three components, and I want, because I was asked questions on this after the last presentation, I just want to take just a moment to talk about budget support. Budget support is where you basically give money to a country and you trust the country to spend it. It's always controversial. It has to be done very carefully. But if your goal, if countries are really strapped and they don't have any foreign exchange, or, you know, they're completely out of money, there's a role for that in emergency response, and there's an art in doing it in a way that, and that's a good reason for involving CSOs, local CSOs, because they help you tell you what the impacts were on the ground. And another component is to move into the longer term. Well, just to conclude this on GFRP, basically we currently have 1.2 billion in projects in 35 countries. This is all since May 29th, 2008. 800 million of this has been dispersed, about two-thirds. Now, dispersing money is how you make sure it's actually spent the way it's supposed to be spent, and it's the slowest thing. The headroom for fast-tracking, I can respond to the question period if anyone wants to know, has been raised to 2 billion, which means that countries have the ability to use their IDA in a big hurry if they wish to. And not all this money is additional. Some of it's pushed around, but at least half a billion of this is fully additional money that, made available to countries under GFRP. Now, I'll just use a couple of minutes at the end, if I may, because I know there's a lot of interest on this very euphonically named GASP, which is the Global Agriculture and Food Security Program. That name comes from the U.S. Treasury, not from the World Bank. And it was discussed by the G20. And it's a proposed funding mechanism owned by the donors and run by the donors. That means countries, donor countries, to improve income and food security of poor people through investments in agriculture. It's not that agriculture, the purpose is not to grow more food. The purpose is to promote food security and poverty alleviation, but where agriculture is the entry point. That's the key thing. And it's a response to the calls from L'Aquila and Pittsburgh. I don't want to go into philosophy with you, but the key, it tries to learn from what we've learned about emergency response. It's got to be additional. It has to be rapidly available. Most importantly, it has to be owned by countries. Everything in GFRP are recipient-executed projects by the countries, and that's mostly what GAFS will do. It needs to mobilize finance not only from concessional sources, but through public-private partnerships and elsewhere. It will fund, at least we don't know exactly what it will fund because the donors haven't fully agreed on it yet, but I understand from discussions, recent discussions, it will fund raising ag productivity, markets, which is good, risk and vulnerability, and maybe facilitating non-farm rural livelihoods and increase public and private capacity. It's primarily, there will be a public sector window, as I understand, or that's what's being discussed. And the public, and it'll be targeted to, you know, you really have to worry about targeting whenever you talk about something concessional, whenever there's an element of grant in something. And that's for the low-income countries or regional entities. And it's very much targeted to countries that have strategized themselves. And in Africa, it would be to finance things like CADEP compacts, where they've gone through a long process of consultation. It's not to be driven by the World Bank or by the donors or by the UN. It's driven by the countries. There'll be a private sector window, which will be separate and ring-fenced from that, but operating in the same countries as the public sector window, and that will be buying equity or, in some cases, buying debt from firms. And that will be the choice of the donors concerned who want to pay for that. And then we hope there'll be a technical assistance window which will really find a way to contribute to maintaining institutional sort of capacity, rapid response capacity, institutional memory of how to go in quickly and assess what's needed and get the funds to the right place. There'll be external governance from the donor side and with an advisory committee. And it will be implemented by a variety of international financial institutions. The World Bank is one, IFAD is one, African Development Bank is one, and there will be others, I presume. And these agencies will then use their own internal procedures to appraise projects directly with the countries concerned. So I'll just end on that. It should be country-led and transparent. And that's sort of a summary of it on the screen. Thank you.